following program is furnished by its producer, host, and sponsors.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com.
One out of seven means they can all fall down, except for Sarah. Why? Because Sarah is uninsured. In fact, one out of seven Americans are uninsured. This isn't just a number or a graph in a report. It's people. Families with simple needs like wanting to provide for a child. And children who want nothing more than to be children. One out of seven of us is uninsured, but all of us have access to a voting booth. Make sure you vote with this issue in mind. Learn more and share your voice at voiceforTheUninsured.org.
Oh, may I be one who sees what's in front of me.
That's voiceforTheUninsured.org, because one out of seven is 45 million too many.
Thanks for tuning in. We are live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland and live online. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Today we'll be talking with Dr. Daryl Dykes, a renowned expert on spinal care and disorders, including arthritis, fractures, deformities, and tumors. Dr. Dykes is presently in practice in Twin Cities Spine Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, is a spokesperson for the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, and he'll join us to talk about back pain, the causes, treatment, and prevention. So for all you listeners out there who've said, oh, my aching back, listen up to find out what you can do to help ease the pain. Call in today with any questions to 845-624-1300. And now joining us is Dr. Dykes. Hi, Dr. Dykes. How are you?
I'm fine, Barbara. How are you? Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. I know, actually, you're calling in today from London, so I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Back pain, it is so common, and so many people suffer with it. What are the main causes of back pain?
You know, Barbara, back pain is a condition that most adults will experience at some point in their life. What we know from most of our research is that this is largely a genetic disorder, and it's compiled or made worse by some of our day-to-day activities.
What kind of day-to-day activities will bring on back pain? For instance, what are some suggestions? Not suggestions, well, but what would cause back pain in your normal daily activities?
Sure. Well, you know, there are the typical scenarios where people have an injury, a lifting injury or a motor vehicle accident or a fall or something along that line. But more than that, and more commonly, it's a repetitive use or repetitive misuse disorder that is on top of an underlying predisposition to back pain that we have, probably based on genetics.
So wait, explain that a little bit more in detail. Back pain is a genetic disorder, and so some people, even if they, say, have improper body mechanics, may not develop the back pain because they're not predisposed to it? Is that right?
That is what we're beginning to understand with most of our more recent research. The way that I explain this to patients very often is use the analogy of tires, like on your automobile.
Okay.
And as you know, you can buy automobile tires that are 2,000-mile tires or 5,000-mile tires or even 10,000-mile tires. And the main difference between those different types of tires has solely to do with how they manufacture them. So how many layers of rubber down, how many layers of ply are put down. But then, as you also know, you will vary the lifespan of your tires based on what you do with them on a daily basis. So the more miles you put on, the more potholes you hit, those are likely to shorten the lifespan of your tires. So to take that back to what humans experience with back pain, we're beginning to understand there's probably a basic underlying difference in the type of disc that individuals will inherit. Some of these discs are more resilient, some are less resilient, but then it's these day-to-day activities, in essence how many potholes you hit during life, that probably have some impact on whether or not you're going to experience back pain or the long-term consequences of disc degeneration, we call it.
Wow, that's really interesting. And that is that new research out? That's
well, it's, you know, there is research that is helping us understand the molecular or sort of underlying genetic basis of disc degeneration. And we've understood for a long time that there's probably multiple different factors went into whether or not one will experience disc degeneration, or more importantly, whether or not one will experience back pain as a result of disc degeneration.
Okay. So for the listeners out there, if somebody is has developed back pain, something new to them, and they've been suffering with a lot of pain maybe for a week or so, what's their first step? What should they do to try to treat themselves before they seek treatment?
So, Barbara, the overwhelming message that I'd want to leave everyone with is that, number one, back pain is very common. Almost every adult will have some experience in their lifetime with back pain at one episode or another. The second most important thing to understand is almost universally these episodes are self-limiting. That means they're going to go away. Patients will get better with usually nothing more than time.
Okay. Is there anything that they should do on their own, or it'll just go away without them needing to do anything?
Well, you know, there are certain things that that we call red flags, and there are certain situations where a patient should obviously immediately get in touch with a physician or seek medical advice. If they're having back pain that is severe, that's not manageable with typical measures such as, you know, rest or anti-inflammatory medications, if they have fevers related with the back pain that might indicate an infection, if there's severe weakness in their legs in the case of neck pain, their upper extremities, if they have any trouble with their bowel or bladder, in essence controlling bowel or bladder function, these are all signs of potentially dangerous situations where a person should immediately contact a medical professional and get a firm diagnosis. But for the garden variety episode of back pain, what we typically recommend is a period of observation, rest, ice, heat, anti-inflammatory medications, and we've learned, by and large, these episodes will resolve with time with those simple measures.
And how much time will they resolve? Is there is it 2 weeks, can you give a number with that, or it just varies depending on the person?
Well, you know, Barbara, almost all episodes of self-limited back pain will resolve in the first 4, 6, or 8 weeks from the onset.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if you have symptoms that are lasting in a severe state for even many days or several weeks, that's something that should be evaluated by a physician. But certainly, the back pain that comes on as a result of some weekend activity on a Friday, typically that will settle down with time with these simple measures that I mentioned.
Okay. Now, you went over the different red flags that people should be aware of. Now, weakness in their legs, fever. If they don't have those symptoms, though, and they are just suffering with the back pain, and it doesn't resolve on their own, when should they say to themselves, oh, I think I really need to go see a doctor? Or when should they seek treatment? I mean, if it's 8 weeks seems like a long time somebody should wait with severe pain or discomfort.
Absolutely. And I think most of the time, at least a phone call to the family doctor is warranted. And one of the things that I will typically ask patients when they first present with an episode of back pain, is this getting better, is this getting worse, or is this staying about the same?
Okay.
So certainly if you have an episode of back pain that is worsening with time rather than getting better, well, that would be an episode where you'd certainly want to call in and get some professional advice about how to deal with that. If the back pain is getting better with time, and you do notice that on a day-to-day basis things are slowly improving, probably one of these episodes that are like 95% of the episodes of back pain that will ultimately get better with time.
Okay. Go over some of the different situations, I guess, where you can really get back pain. I know you touched upon it a little bit before, but maybe if you turn the wrong way, if you bend down, if you're lifting something up, what should people do to prevent that from happening? What kind of body mechanics should they use so they don't end up getting hurt?
Sure. Well, if you were to broadly classify the things that are likely to increase back pain, it's loading of the disc. Our spine is made up of both bones and discs, or like the cushions between the bones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the disc that is the source of the back pain in most of these situations. So things that tend to load the disc, like jarring, like bouncing, like sitting. Actually, sitting is something that almost routinely results in much more back pain than standing or lying down. If you're heavy lifting, if you're lifting from a awkward position, those types of things are more likely to cause an episode of back pain.
I was going to ask you, you mentioned sitting, and do you see a lot more patients coming in because they're at their computers, just sitting and not really moving? Because once you're entrenched in your work sometimes at a computer, you can just literally be there for hours and hours without moving. Do you notice an increase with patients just that have jobs where they're at their computer most of the time?
Absolutely. Just based on a biomechanical perspective, we probably put somewhere between 4 and 5 times the loads across our low back when we're sitting as compared to standing or lying down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very, very classically one of the positions that patients find difficult when they do have a back pain issue.
Now, what can they do if they're if they have a job where they're at their computers most of the time? Is there how can they avoid that? Obviously, they could get up and move around, but, I mean, when they're sitting there, is there some kind of device or something that they can use to alleviate or prevent actually back pain?
Sure. Many patients will use a lumbar support of some kind. There are also ergonomically designed chairs that tend to be better than some other chairs. There's no good scientific evidence that I'm aware of, at least, that will support one particular brand or type of chair over another. What we generally recommend is that patients do just sort of pay attention to good body mechanics and take breaks where they can get up and move around, where they alter their position from time to time. Also, neck pain is one of the important factors that will go in with this. So we always recommend that your computer height is adjusted, the monitor height is adjusted appropriately, that you use a headset rather than leaning the shoulder on the telephone handset on the shoulder. Those simple measures usually do help.
Okay, and how about a physical therapist or chiropractor? Does that come into play to alleviate the symptoms?
Yeah, certainly. In most places, physical therapists don't operate independently, so a referral to a physical therapist is something that usually comes from a physician or a chiropractor.
Okay.
Chiropractors do practice independently, and many patients will see a chiropractor as their first line of acute back pain. So this is new back pain, or even chronic back pain that has been a recurring episode for them.
Okay. And once a patient, say, or a listener out there who's been suffering with back pain and they subsequently end up going to the doctor and to see an orthopedist, how do you diagnose whether someone needs surgery or not?
Well, we broadly classify back pain in two categories. One would be acute back pain. The other would be chronic back pain. Acute back pain, or acute in any situation, means a sudden onset, new onset, a recent problem. Chronic is a more long-standing, recurring problem. Patients with acute back pain are the ones that I've been talking about so far this evening.
Okay.
Those patients who have a sudden lifting injury with even sometimes severe back pain, and it's an acute episode, almost universally, those patients will get better with fairly simple measures, and they don't need surgical treatment. Patients, on the other hand, who have chronic back pain or recurring episodes of this over and over again, where it becomes a life-altering condition for them, and they've exhausted operative options that we have, including chiropractor, physical therapy, injections of cortisone-like medications, medications, those are the patients that can become candidates for surgery. But if I had to look at the whole spectrum of back pain, Barbara, I would say that probably, at best, it's 2 to 5% of patients who have episodes of back pain that will ever become good candidates for surgical treatment.
Okay. Hold your thought right there. We're just going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in 60 seconds.
Great.
1 out of 7 is not just a statistic. It's a woman who avoids prenatal care and is forced to deliver in the ER. It's a grandfather who chooses his blood pressure meds over his Parkinson's meds because he can't afford both. It's a friend who fears going bankrupt if she ever gets sick. 1 out of 7 Americans is uninsured. To the American Medical Association, this is not just a statistic, it's a tragedy. But while 1 out of 7 of us aren't covered, all of us have access to a voting booth. Make sure you vote with this issue in mind. Learn more and share your voice at voiceforTheUninsured.org. That's voiceforTheUninsured.org, because 1 out of 7 is 45 million too many.
And we're back. Thanks for tuning in. We are live in the studios. You're listening to Health in 30. I'm Barbara Ficarra, and joining us today is Dr. Daryl Dykes, and we're talking about back pain. Call in with any questions, 845-624-1300. Dr. Dykes, before we went to break, you said that 2 to 5% are candidates for back surgery, so that seems like a small amount. That's good news.
That's very good news. Well, of course, Barbara, there are multiple around this broad category of back pain, and we have multiple different treatments that are effective towards disability.
Yep, we're kind of going in and out a little bit, Dr. Dykes. I don't think we heard what you just said.
What I said was that there are multiple different reasons to have back pain.
Okay.
And it's the patient's spine surgeon that can evaluate them, usually with a physical examination, taking a careful history, and then also advanced imaging of some sort. So the doctor will usually order an MRI scan or a CT scan or some other study to help pinpoint the specific diagnosis. And it's that specific diagnosis that then determines which is the right surgical treatment for that patient.
Okay. I want to go back a little bit to the exercises, because I know actually on the orthoinfo.org site, there's great information where they have everything spelled out in terms of what patients can do or people can do to exercise. Can you just go through some of those different exercises that people can do at home just to loosen up their back and feel better?
Absolutely. Well, you know, if you understand, it's important to understand the anatomy of the spine.
Okay.
So the spine is a column of bone, and in between each of the bones is a disc. So this disc sort of acts like a shock absorber between each of the bones. It's the disc that will usually degenerate over time. So to give you an analogy, the way it'll often describe this to patients, if you think about a regular kitchen sponge that you might have at home,
mm-hmm.
when that sponge is moist or wet, it is very pliable. You can stretch it, you can turn it, you can twist it, you can do all sorts of different things to it, and it's going to go back to its normal shape. Our discs are very much like these sponges, so in a normal healthy state, they're well hydrated, or they have a high water content. Over time, the discs dry out, and as the discs dry, similar to a kitchen sponge might have, if you twist it or turn it or stretch it, it's more likely to tear or crack rather than stretch. So once these tears or cracks start to occur in the disc, that's what brings on this back pain. And there's no cure for reversing this degenerative or drying out process of the disc. What we do have, on the other hand, is very normal and very trainable muscles that surround the spine. So there's a group of muscles immediately around the spine, and then there are also very strong muscles in our belly and in the back that can help support the spine and help take some of these loads that the discs are no longer able to carry.
Okay.
So from an exercise point of view, what we recommend is a program of what we call core strengthening. So this is a specific targeted exercise program to get these core muscles, strengthen them, and to sort of take up the slack for these now degenerative discs.
So if you strengthen your muscles in your stomach, in the areas surrounding your other part of your body, then you can help ease the back pain?
You can both ease the back pain, but also you can prevent or lessen the likelihood of having repeated episodes of the back pain.
Okay, great. We actually have a caller on the line. Hi, welcome to Health and 30 on WRCR. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Hi, doctor. How are you?
Hi there. I'm great. Thank you.
You know, I suffered with back pain for years, and when I recently went to an orthopedist, he advised me that there was some arthritis in the lower back, and he explained that that was normal, but I have a family history of rheumatoid arthritis, and I was wondering if there's anything I should be doing or taking. I mean, you see these supplements like glucosamine and things, but is there anything I could do to hopefully prevent that or alleviate that from becoming more chronic in the future?
But that's an absolutely excellent question. And when we talk about arthritis, there are really two different broad categories of arthritis. And sometimes that term is used misappropriately. There is the arthritis that is a true disease process, like rheumatoid arthritis that you mentioned. Those are medical conditions that require very, very specific medical treatments and have to be managed by a physician. On the other hand, we have these degenerative conditions. And the arthritis that people typically speak of in terms of back pain is more this second type of arthritis, so this degenerative arthritis. There is absolutely nothing to help that. That's a disease process. That is a normal process that involves aging, wear and tear, and breakdown of these elements. And this is very, very similar to the type of arthritis that one usually gets in the hip or the knee or shoulders or elbows or other joints. So to answer your question directly, this is not like rheumatoid arthritis. This is not something that you have to be concerned about, a destructive ongoing process. On the other hand, it can be very disabling, and the back pain issues that result from this wear and tear are things that you can work with your physician to manage, either through these exercise-type programs or ultimately, if the non-operative measures don't work, then there are surgical treatments that might be appropriate for you.
Okay.
Thank you, caller. Thanks for calling in. Dr. Dykes, that was a great question because it incorporated both the arthritis area involved and the back pain. Is it common to see the arthritis causing the back pain?
Well, in the broadest sense of the word, yes. So if you use the term arthritis to mean this degenerative process that happens in the spine, yes, that we believe is the underlying source of the back pain.
And how common is that?
Well, it's very common. And as you know, all parts with time and with use will demonstrate some wear and tear. And, I often say the only people who are not going to experience some sort of degenerative arthritis are the people who aren't fortunate enough to live long enough to have wear and tear on their parts.
Right. So what are preventative measures? For the people out there listening now, what can they do to avoid getting back pain? What can they do? Is there, I mean, obviously proper body mechanics, make sure they're turning the right way, lifting the right things, but what else can they do to keep them?
Well, there are several things, and as I mentioned earlier on, we are beginning to understand that a lot of this is genetically based, and we certainly cannot change our genetics.
Right.
But what we can do is change how many potholes we get across the lifespan of our back. And if I have to call out one particular factor that probably has a greater significance than any other factor, it's cigarette smoking. And I would absolutely urge anyone with or without pain not to smoke or smoking as they are for several reasons. Number one, we do think that it accelerates this degenerative process. But more importantly, is that this has a significant impact on any of the treatments that we might have. So if you do develop back pain, smokers have a much greater chance of failure with any of the treatment methods that we have compared to non-smokers.
That's really interesting. So that accelerates it? People that smoke, it can accelerate the back pain process or the degenerative process?
Absolutely. It accelerates the process, and it makes the treatments that we have much likely to succeed.
And how about people that are overweight? Does that impact as well?
You know, there's not any clear evidence that obesity or overweight or the weight itself is a direct factor and a cause of back pain. What I happen to believe is more likely the case is obesity is usually related with deconditioning. So patients who are obese tend to be less well-conditioned, they're less fit, they're less strong, they're less aerobically in shape. That is probably a greater factor in the back pain and then also the how this back pain plays out over time than the weight itself.
Okay, great. So for the listeners, if you had to sum up in three things patients or listeners can do right now, what would they be? Three things to help them avoid back pain. Don't smoke, I would say number one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Don't smoke. Stay fit. Also, don't panic. When you do have your first, not if, but when you do have your first episode of back pain, rest assured that most of the time, even though those symptoms may be quite severe sometimes, this is something that's going to resolve. You probably do not need surgery.
Great. Dr. Dykes, thank you so very much for joining us today. I'm sure you provided the listeners with great information. And for more info, you can go to orthoinfo.org. It's filled with tons of useful information. And you can search out an orthopedist in your area as well. Thank you, Dr. Dykes. Thanks again. And coming up next week on Health in 30, join us on September 7th, the health topic, the uninsured. Dr. Nancy Nielsen, president-elect of the American Medical Association, a delegate from New York, served two terms on the AMA Council of Scientific Affairs, and is the chief medical officer at Independent Health Association, a major health insurer in New York, will join me to talk about the healthcare crisis, the uninsured. To find out what you can do, go to voiceforTheUninsured.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening. As always, be in charge of your health. Speak up and ask questions. Stay safe. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. See you next week. For more info, go to healthin30.com. And for more info on the experts, go to healthandwellnessexpert.com. And for more orthopedic info, check out orthoinfo.org. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks to Dennis Smith from firstresponders.com and to the AMA. Thanks so much. Have a great week. See you then. Now these
diabetes and no health insurance can be a lethal combination. So can heart disease and no health insurance. Even strep throat without proper care could turn serious, even life-threatening. That's why at the American Medical Association, we're fighting back with a combination of our own. Today, physicians are caring for many uninsured patients, and they're speaking out with them to make sure all Americans have coverage. One out of seven of us is uninsured, but all of us have access to a voting booth. Make sure you vote with this issue in mind. Learn more and share your voice at voicefortheuninsured.org.
Oh, may I be one who sees what's in front of me, what's in front of me.
That's voicefortheuninsured.org, because one out of seven is 45 million too many.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rate? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders, with benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. firstresponders.com.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
AP Radio News. I'm Ross Simpson. A spokesman for Idaho Senator Larry Craig says Craig will announce tomorrow his future plans after widespread calls from fellow Republicans to resign. Democrats like Senator Charles Schumer of New York say it isn't for them to say whether Craig should stay or go.
It's up to Senator Craig and gauging the feeling of his party members in his constituency whether he can stay here and be effective, and we'll see what he has to say.
If Craig resigns in the wake of his guilty plea stemming from an arrest in an airport men's room in Minneapolis, officials back home say Idaho's lieutenant governor will replace Craig. GOP Senator John Warner of Virginia announced today he's not going to seek a sixth term. Warner says he'll work hard to find a way to end the war in Iraq before he leaves the Senate in January 2009.
I will continue to play a role in trying to bring about a success.